person, without a doubt, Dr. Gans Ferentz, for another edition of How Does That Make You Feel? And we're going to talk about something that has been, you know, quite the topic over the past little while. It's certainly been talked about a lot on this show and the other shows, and that's quiet quitting. Lots of people are talking about it. Some of them are doing it. Many folks not 100% sure what it is and what might be good for them and what parts might cause them some problems. Dr. Gans Ferentz, of course, is a registered psychologist. He joins us once a month for How Does That Make You Feel? And he has some ideas on how to sort through it all so you can maybe take some of the good, let go of the bad, no matter if you're working from home or if you're back in the office. Dr. Gans, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, Jaylen?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm interested in your definition of quiet quitting, because I think that some people have a different one, but I want to hear what you want to, how you would describe it.
Yeah, so, like, from my understanding, I mean, it goes by a lot of different names. I mean, the recent name is quiet quitting, but a lot of people have seen it as work to rule. It's just not investing very much in your job is one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is sort of having healthier boundaries around your work. But the idea is, I'm not going to do extra stuff. I'm not going to, you know, volunteer. I'm going to do just enough not to get fired, right?
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, when you talk about, you know, maybe not investing or just doing enough not to get fired, whereas I kind of see it a little bit more along the lines of those healthy boundaries, is setting up some stronger boundaries, putting them in place, saying, hey, you know what, I'm not going to be answering emails all night because that's healthier for me. I'm not taking your phone calls unless it's an extreme emergency. You can text me first, sort of thing.
Right.
And I think for some folks, it's really much needed.
Well, absolutely. I think it really is a reaction to a lot of stuff that's been happening. I mean, some of it is just basic COVID exhaustion, right, from everything we've been through the last 3 years. Some of it is legitimate burnout from, you know, either not having a good self-care system or a toxic work environment or whatever it might be. So there's lots of good to take from the whole quiet quitting movement, and there's lots of stuff to be aware of that may not be such a great approach, right? So, like, absolutely, the good boundaries, okay, you know what? The agreement that I have with work is I show up, they tell me what I need to do, I do it, and they pay me, right? You know what I mean? That's kind of the arrangement that we have. A lot of times we take it too far, either as an employee, and we overcommit, we overgive, and if we don't do that consciously and deliberately and we don't have proper boundaries on that, well, it's a recipe for burnout, right? And then we end up being exhausted. We end up sometimes even resenting the work we're doing, even though it used to be fun. And that's when it becomes really, really unhealthy. There's lots of good that comes with investing in your work and finding stuff. We could talk about that a little later. But it is, you know, if we have healthy boundaries around that, sometimes that what we call quiet quitting makes sense. It's like, this is how I survived this workplace, especially if it's toxic, or this is how I reestablish some healthy boundaries around my life, my family, and what is good for me while I also engage in work.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, that's a part of it for me. I think those healthy boundary setup, I think that's good for the employee and the employer. Now, having said that, if quiet quitting means, okay, you're just going to come in and half-ass your job,
right,
and really just, you know, wait for someone to kick you out the door, that's a different story, right? That's not
very
good.
Different. Well, I mean, so there are messages there for the employer, right? The employer really has to ask the question, why is this happening? Like, what is that? Is it the wrong person in the position, which sometimes it is, or is it something structural? Like, you know, is it the supervision? Is it the company culture? Is it our organizational structure? You know, what is it that's creating this type of reaction or response? And I think it is very important that workplaces pay attention to this general trend, but also if it's showing up in their workplace, like, okay, what do we need to look at? Mm-hmm. How can we look long term at this stuff? And how do we recognize the signs of other issues and what do we do about them? You know, I think that's really important to pay attention to.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit more about maybe what employers can learn from mm-hmm. this. We know that it can be pretty tough to find good employees or mm-hmm. employees in, you know, across the country and, you know, specifically in Alberta right now yeah. as mm-hmm. well. And I mean, if something like this is happening, as you've mentioned, it's a really great opportunity to say, okay, is it just an individual or is it a work culture thing, right? And take that closer look at what's going on in the office as a whole.
Absolutely. Well, you look at the workplace generally, especially with Gen X folks coming up. Well, actually, millennials and anybody younger than them,
okay.
really. It's they've got a very different approach to their lives and work. And they really are looking for something more than just, say, job security or, you know, a certain paycheck, right? They are looking for a quality of life, and they're leading the way and really wanting, you know, what we call work-life balance, or just a sense that there's more to it than just, like, showing up to work and getting the paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at companies, particularly, like, Silicon Valley-type companies, tech companies, they really get that. And they compete when they're recruiting for the best people. They compete not so much on salary, but they compete on culture and perks, right? You know, who's got the best, like, basketball court or omelet bar or whatever, do you know what I mean? Like, they're really looking at that because they want to make sure that their people are happy, not just generally, but also very happy at work and feel engaged because they know it's going to help their bottom line.
Again, whenever we get into this conversation, you tend to get pretty fired up about it. And I'm going to suspect that it's has a lot more to do with the kind of the age range that listens to my show, because I think that, you know, for those who are in that age range, maybe of, you know, 40 to 65, mm-hmm. Let's put it that way.
We, hey, my people.
Yeah, right. Like that's us, right? That
yeah.
we started work and in our head, like you think the 80s and the 90s, it was all about getting ahead. It was about working your butt off, you know, putting in all of the hours, because the harder I worked, the more money I was going to make, mm-hmm. the higher on the ladder I was going to climb, the boss was going to notice, all of that. And it's kind of changed.
It's changed a lot. Yeah. You know, and I'm not sure that was, although we did it, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that was the best approach or, you know, the healthiest thing for us to do, because then we hit the wall sometimes. Sometimes it's a health issue or a divorce or a bankruptcy or something major happens and we hit that midlife crisis point and we got to figure some stuff out.
Yeah.
You know, in my book, early in my book, I have this quote. It's from Stephen Covey. It says, "Most people spend their whole lives climbing the ladder of success, only to realize when they get to the top that the ladder has been leaning against the wrong wall." Right?
Yeah.
And this is sort of the deal with us older folks, right? I think the young folks have seen us, their parents, their grandparents, kind of bang away at it and do all this stuff to try to get ahead and, you know, clearly provide a different experience for them. And, you know, they have sometimes they have the options and the opportunities because we banged away at it, right? But they see us and they see that, you know, maybe we're not as happy. Maybe we're not as healthy.
Yeah.
Maybe there are some issues around work-life balance that we haven't really paid attention to or adjusted to, right? And so they're doing
maybe.
It differently.
Right? Maybe.
Right? so they want to do it differently, which that's good. I think, you know, you can teach old dogs new tricks. Like, we should learn from the young people and take some of their guidance with this and maybe start adjusting how we approach work. Because here's the thing. Here's the payoff. Well, I'll talk about the payoff for the employer.
Okay.
I'll talk about the payoff.
Interesting people, relatable stories. You're listening to 630 CHED Afternoons with Jalen Nye.
Okay, it's 419. We've been talking about quiet quitting with Dr. Gans Ferenc in our monthly session of how does that make you feel. So we kind of, you know, talked a little bit Well, we talked a lot about this, but what is the, what could be the payoff? What could be at the end of the day for the employer and the employee when it comes to quiet quitting?
Yeah. So the employer, the big thing is, like, we know that, well, this is even a decade or two ago, that the number of people going off work for emotional injuries versus physical injuries, there are more emotional injuries, you know, kind of time away from work now than physical injuries. So one of the payoffs is you have less of that. You have people feeling more positive about their work and having more balance in their lives, not having the emotional stress and going off on stress leave. So you have less time that's lost. You have a lower hit on your, WCB and your insurance process as the employer. But you also have, like, people who stay with your company. You got people who are engaged, who are invested, and they want to do well because they feel refreshed, they feel calm, they feel happy, they feel balanced. And their families appreciate that too. So these folks stick around, they work harder, they create more wealth for you, but then they also are great recruiting tools. They bring in their friends. They say, hey, this is a great place to work. Come on in, this is awesome. We got this great team. You got to work for us, right? So your recruiting costs go down, your training costs go down, a whole bunch of, like, savings happen at that end. And so that's one of the biggest things that you get. But you it's important for the employer to really be thinking long term and also thinking about it as an investment. A few years ago, one of the insurance companies, actually what they did was they, for their employees, they went from a budget or a benefits package of $3,000 per year for psychological services. They went from $3,000 for those employees up to $10,000.
Wow.
Right, because they wanted to, they know that it's an investment and they get the more than that back in terms of having healthy employees. So there's huge benefits for the employer on that end when you know, you kind of pay attention to creating a healthy, psychologically healthy workplace.
So, Gans, before I let you go here, I think, you know, at the end of the day, when we talk about, you know, quiet quitting or quiet firing, whatever it is, a lot of folks, I think, are starting to find or realize more about the importance of work-life balance. And healthy boundaries, I believe, are right and can be reasonable. You're doing your job and you're doing it well, but you're just maybe setting up a few rules there. But what happens if you're in that spot where you're not happy, you're not engaged, you're angry, you're depressed, whatever. What is your recommendation for that person who might be listening?
Absolutely. My team and I have dealt with this so much, especially over the last, like, year and a half, right? It really is, if you're not happy with where you are, start looking around. You really deserve to be happy with what you do. It is important to have very clear boundaries on your time, on your energy, how much you work, what is expected of you. But you also need to be engaged in what you're doing. We spend a third of our waking time, or half of our waking time, actually, a third of our day at work. And so, yes, sometimes we have to survive the job so that we can get through the day and carry on because we need the paycheck or whatever it is. But as much as possible, you want to be engaged, because actually engagement of the employee, of you as an employee, it actually is healthy for you. You actually feel happier. Your immune system is stronger. You feel happier and have more energy going home when you have a sense of purpose, when you have a sense of contribution, when you know that your job is important, and also you feel valued and looked after. When you can create that type of experience for yourself, when you have a sense of stewardship and a sense of, I want to contribute to this company for this reason, I want to contribute to this cause for this reason, all of a sudden you wake up and there's meaning to your life.
Yeah.
And studies have shown that people who have meaning in their lives and who are engaged in whatever it is, whether it's a volunteer job or you're working at home or from home or you're working outside of the workplace, you live longer, you have better health, you have better relationships.
It's a lot
and
there.
It's just better for you. So as much as we want to have healthy boundaries, we also want to, like, consciously and deliberately invest where appropriate in your job so that you can have a better idea, a better time at it.
Absolutely. Dr. Gans, I feel better already. Thank you for this. And of course, you can find out more at Dr. Gans' website at AskDrGans.com, right? .com.
No. Yep, absolutely.
All right, we'll talk to you next time. I should know that by now off my heart, but I'm so invested in the conversation. Gans, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Talk to you later.
Okay.
Have a great one.
Yeah, you betcha. Dr. Gans Ference joining us this afternoon.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.